Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Chicago Public Schools CEO stays for now. So does the tension.
I will be fighting for our kids, and if the CEO doesn't change, I will demand his resignation.
But what does the future look like for Pedro Martinez? The mayor won't publicly say where he stands, but stresses voters elected him to transform the city's schools.
For too long, our schools have not delivered on the promise of public education. I am going to deliver on the promise of public education.
As for Martinez, he says resigning would harm students and that one of the main reasons critics want him out is based on a lie.
I would like to address an unfortunate misinformation campaign that CPS is planning to close schools. There is simply no truth to this.
The school board makes that clear.
There's no plan to close schools.
With a non-binding vote prohibiting school closures until 2027. By then, Ed Burke will be out of prison. Chicago's former most powerful alderman is now living at a federal penitentiary in western Illinois. Meanwhile, the White Sox on the brink of making history. Not great history there, but we'll get to that. For our Week in Review panel this week, we've got our very own Heather Sharone, Laura Washington of ABC 7 News and the Chicago Tribune, Sophia Turin from the Associated Press, and Manny Ramos of Block Club Chicago. Now, let's get to it. Mayor Brandon Johnson wants him gone. And Heather, he appointed the Board of Education, which last night got its chance to take out CPS CEO Pedro Martinez. Didn't happen. How come?
Well, it's complicated. Martinez has a contract that allows the board to dismiss him immediately for cause. But if there's not cause, he gets to stay for 6 months, paid, of course, to help transition to the next CEO. So a lot of things have to fall into place before I would imagine the board would feel comfortable dumping its CEO. No organization wants to be leadership, and especially at this time for CPS. Ongoing contract negotiations with the teachers union. There are a lot of moving parts. Oh, and by the way, voters in less than 40 days are going to elect the first elected members of the school board. So I think that it was perhaps a little bit overblown by us in the media that there was going to be some sort of immediate reaction by the board. But it's clear that this issue of Pedro Martinez's continued employment at CPS is now firmly in the laps of the last mayoral appointed school board. And what they will do is an open question.
So Laura, knowing all of that, why did the mayor ask for his resignation? Why make this big push?
Well, he's not talking. You know, I mean, he won't even actually formally confirm that he does want him to resign, although everything he says indicates that. There have been a number of things supposedly that he hasn't been as responsive to the board as the board would see fit for him to be responsive for. There's this issue of the pension payment. There's this issue of the mayor wanting the board to take out a high interest loan, the CPS take out a high interest loan, and they've rejected that. The extraordinary things, this just never happens in Chicago. When a mayor says go, you go. When a mayor says stay, you stay. And in this case, Martinez is pushing back, and so far the board appears to be sticking with him.
So Manny, what are the stakes for the mayor?
Well, the stakes for the mayor is that this is another instance where he sort of has made this kerfuffle around a political decision that he's trying to organize or seemingly behind the scenes. So whether or not this can happen as quickly as he wants it to, I'm not sure. But it also leads into sort of the other issues facing other agencies at the moment from the bigger heads, too.
And so we're going to talk in a little bit about CTA, for example. You've been reporting a lot on that. But I want to get to just this notion that he's trying to push out Martinez, feed into critics' narrative that he's doing the bidding of the Chicago Teachers Union. Sophia?
You know, I would say, what parents are worried about is the bus driver shortage. Are the budget cuts that have led to, you know, we're not seeing all the specialists, you know, at schools that we were support staff. They have to open schools slightly later, so parents are being late to work. There's all of those types of issues. I think parents more will pay attention to contract negotiations when things get much more intense. I think
parents want stability, and right now things are sort of up in the air. If Martinez were to leave, that would create all kinds of chaos. It is exactly the wrong time. And I think that that would unnerve a lot of parents and families. And I certainly don't think anybody's looking at wanting to have a strike right now.
And to Martinez's point, I believe, he said that he would be the seventh CPS CEO in just a decade, which is unheard of.
That's a lot of turnover. And when the person at the top changes, so often do their top leaders.
It's like dominoes.
And there's mixed messages, too. You know, you're getting these emails saying we're having high enrollment, but then the next one is, no, I'm still the CEO. I mean, as a parent and, as somebody who covers schools, that's an extraordinary email to get from the head of the school district, you know, nation's fourth largest, I'm still in charge, you know.
Yeah, I don't think you can overstate just how soured the relationship between Martinez and Johnson became with the news that there is this list of potentially schools to be closed or co-located. It's important to remember, Brandon Johnson is not mayor if Rahm Emanuel did not close 50 schools in 2013. So I think that the news that sort of there has been this list, which Martinez acknowledged crafting as part of a five-year strategic plan for the district without the mayor's knowledge, the mayor says, or the mayor's office has told me, I think that really sort of reached the breaking point. And the question is how does somebody like Pedro Martinez lead a district where he has lost the confidence of the teachers union, they've issued a vote of no confidence, and lost the confidence of the mayor? I think that's a question that the board has to grapple with too, especially given just how just deeply painful those school closures remain in many black and brown communities in Chicago. The sense that that's even a possibility, I think, is something that you saw why the board voted the way it did yesterday to sort of reassure parents. But that is an indication of just how deeply broken sort of the relationship between Chicago's school leaders have become.
And you're talking about the vote to put a moratorium on school closures through 2027. That's when a fully elected school board will, for the first time in Chicago, be in place. Laura, do you expect that these are conversations that board members are having in private?
Oh, of course, absolutely. To Heather's point, first of all, there are the legal issues and what they can do if they can remove him. If they do fire him for cause, he's probably going to sue. He has a history of in the past of in another school district he was at where he took legal action and got a settlement. So they have to look at all that. And beyond just the question of whether they can do it legally, is this the timing that they want to do it at, given that we're in the middle of negotiations, given that there's been so much instability? For the mayor and the teachers union, I think they have to worry about how this looks, though. It looks as though they're trying to execute a coup. I mean, we've known from the beginning that Mayor Johnson is very close to the teachers union. He used to work for the teachers union. It's looking as though he's acting at their behest. Stacey Davis Gates, the head of the teachers union, has been very critical, extremely critical of Martinez. If they push him out, does it look like they're running the system?
And to that end, we actually had Stacey Davis Gates, again, the head of the teachers union, on Chicago Tonight earlier this week. So let's take a listen to what she told us on Monday about that vote of no confidence.
Our CEO is doing two things. He's making presentation to stakeholders as if he is in alignment with the Board of Education, with the Mayor of Chicago, and with the teachers and the paraprofessionals and clinicians. And on the other end of this, he is saying that all of our alignment is impossible to bring to fruition because we don't have the funding. And then he doubles down and says, and I don't have a plan to win the funding either.
So, Manny, do we have a plan from any corner? If we don't have one from Pedro Martinez, is there one from the CTU or the mayor beyond, please, Springfield?
Yeah, I mean, so CTU is asking that they take out a high entrance loan to sort of pay for that pension payment for non-teaching staff. I believe the CTU has also come out and said that, like, this is something that Pedro has done in the past when he was with he was the CFO of CPS in the, I believe, early 2000s. So I think that is sort of like one of the critical pieces that they're trying to push for to help this sort of funding and get to that deal to pay for a lot of the teachers' raises and all that sort.
They're saying it would be a short-term loan because they're saying that they're going to go back to Springfield with some kind of a plan and hoping to get money. But, hope and a prayer is not a reality. And so I think we have to look at whether or not there's any possibilities in Springfield. Governor Pritzker and his legislative leaders have not been very excited or very keen to talk about additional funding.
Sophia, you covered Springfield for a while. Any insight into
well,
that?
Well, other than the dislike of Chicago and Chicago asking for more money, that sense out there, there's a lot of asks right now of the legislature. They're talking about, you know, this public financing of stadiums. There's their own budget to deal with. It doesn't seem like a friendly
environment.
Especially
when the district is seeing this leadership fight, that may not help, I think, appease legislators who are looking at it, right, Heather?
Right. Well, I mean, there are real questions about why the CPS board approved a budget that covered a $500 million deficit, but did not make that $175 million pension payment, which basically forced that issue into the lap of the mayor and the city council, because if CPS doesn't make that payment, the city has to make that payment. That exploded the city's budget for this fiscal year, angering Mayor Johnson, and I'm sure not making a lot of friends on the city council because they now have to deal with it. But the other thing that budget didn't do was to provide sort of funds for the raises that CPS has already tendered to CTU as part of that contract process. So what we've heard from Stacey Davis Gates is, look, this wasn't actually a balanced budget. This budget does not make any sense. But we've heard Martinez time and time again say, I'm being fiscally responsible. I'm refusing to take out that short-term loan, which is not in the best interest of the district. The union's point is, but we have to pay for those things. So it's sort of, they can't agree on the facts of the situation, because CTU is saying it would be the fiscally prudent thing to do to figure out how to pay for those things that you know those bills are going to come due.
Have a plan.
Right.
Have we heard at all, by the way, Heather, from the mayor in terms of, because when he was with the Chicago Teachers Union, he said that the district shouldn't have to take on that cost, that in fact it should be borne by the city. Now he's mayor, switching his tune. Has he talked about that, or at least addressed why there wasn't a conversation with, again, the school board that he appointed, the CEO of CPS?
That's a good question. This, I think, is really an indication of just how messy the breakup between the city and CPS is truly going to be. So if you are electing your own board and you are running a whole other agency, you have to pay your bills. You don't get to come ask the city to help me out, right? Just like I'm a grown-up. I don't get to ask my mom to pay my cell phone bill anymore. I'm sure she would, but I'm just saying, I've got to take care of my own business, and that's essentially what's happening here. So when CPS was controlled by the mayor, made sense for the city to sort of bear those financial burdens. If CPS is on its own and does not report to the mayor's point is you got to pay your own bills.
Now, let's move on to the city budget at large there, because Cranes is reporting that the mayor may need some extra weeks to figure this all out, especially given that he promised to not hike property taxes. So if not that, Manny, what are the options?
I don't think there are many options available, honestly. I think this is the only route, and we got to essentially bite the bullet. I think there needs to be a messaging campaign from the mayor's office to sort of like lay out why this is necessary, what services are going to benefit for such things. But getting the public to buy into that, I think, is going to be a steep hill.
Yeah, there's a survey that was done recently that was published in an op-ed in the Tribune that showed that there's not a huge appetite among voters for property tax increase, even if some of that money is going to go to public education or some of the other needs of the city. This is just not great timing. But he has also not ruled out a property tax increase. He said during the campaign he would not do it, but he seems to be inching away from that now.
And I think we've seen a little bit of the appetite with the failed measure of the so-called mansion tax to help fund homeless services. There was a very strong campaign against it from real estate agencies, and I think a sense of worry about what was the mayor going to do exactly with that money. I think people were looking for a little more assurance, more of a detailed plan, and as we saw in the end, it didn't make it.
And so that failed, but voters are going to have an opportunity to vote for a whole bunch of new elected officials, cast their votes for a referendum, non-binding, on sort of another version of a mansion tax. This one's sort of a millionaire's version, with early voting getting underway. Just throwing it out there. Any observations as the election is here in earnest?
Well, it seemed like a long time coming, and all of a sudden it is upon us, right?
Lo and behold.
Yeah. So it's strange to be a local government reporter covering these sort of elections, because it's not an off year for everybody else, but it's sort of an off year for us. There aren't city council elections. There's no mayor's race. There's no big county offices on the ballot, although the Cook County State's Attorney race, Bob Fioretti, would say he's got a shot against Eileen O'Neill Burke. And, you know, good luck. And so, the issue is that there are going to be a lot of focus nationally, but there are going to be big issues. And again, the school board races will really shape the future, at least in the sort of the next couple of years, of what CPS looks like.
10 of them on the ballot this time around. We will be covering that, of course, all of us, through early November. Let's move on to a story that you've been covering, Sophia, and this is a lawsuit that alleges more than 200 men and women were sexually abused while they were held in Illinois juvenile detention centers. What can you tell us?
So this is just the latest lawsuit. There's been about a half a dozen of them just since May alone, only in Illinois. And it's this just absolutely harrowing, haunting pattern of young children being held in juvenile detention facilities and with allegations of abuse against the people who are supposed to protect them, nurses, chaplains, correctional officers. And Illinois...
Chaplains.
Yeah. Chaplains. And Illinois has an astounding number. It's 667 people to date have made these allegations over the decades. There's multiple people who are named, you know, as repeat offenders. And Illinois nationally is such an astounding number, is kind of one of the worst.
This Illinois stands out for the magnitude of the problem, is part of your reporting.
Yes.
What is it about Illinois?
Illinois has had a long time, decades of problems with how it runs juvenile detention facilities. There's been issues with illegal strip searches. There's been just a host of, you know, of reforms, getting the right people, hiring them, getting rid of people who were accused of wrongdoing. It's been noted in several federal reports just about the conditions, one of the worst in the nation. There'll be some reforms, and then it just, you know, even when we are pressing the governor and county officials, you know, the governor's line on this early on was this was from former administrations. This had nothing to do with me. And then, you know, the next lawsuit came out, and there was a bunch of cases since 2019 when the governor took office. And since then, it's been no comment. They don't want to talk about it. They have nothing. And the thing about it is there more lawsuits are going to come. There will be hundreds more people making these same allegations. And it's happening in other states. You know, the difficulty here is that the prosecutions of these people who are being accused is very, very hard to do. There's statutes of limitations. There's, you know, prosecutors' offices have to step up to do
these. What about changing the culture outside of the lawsuits?
Yeah, and I think some of that slowly has happened. A number of juvenile detention facilities have closed over the years. You know, there were at one time, you know, nine, closer to a dozen now. There's five. And there have been changes at the juvenile detention center, which is noted in this lawsuit. But not, you know, the lawyers would say the issues that have been documented in the lawsuit are still continuing today.
We'll continue to watch for whatever you uncover there. Let's turn to some information that you have uncovered, Manny. So, going back to the city of Chicago, we spent a lot of time talking about Pedro Martinez, but what about another individual who leads a major agency that impacts residents' lives? That, of course, the CTA. So you've outlined some of the shortcomings, some may say, of Dorval Carter, in that he's traveled a lot of outside the city, outside the state even. What can you share with us in terms of how in touch Dorval Carter is with what's going on?
It depends who you ask, right? If you ask anyone within his inner circle, they're saying that he's present all the time and available to staff. If you ask folks that are sort of outside of that circle, they may say something a lot different than that. But what our story really looked at is sort of his schedule over the past year, examining sort of like what his day-to-day looks like, who he's meeting with. And what we found is that he spends a lot of his time traveling. We're talking about cumulatively about like 347 days out of the year. He was spent traveling to places like Spain, to New Zealand, Australia, Puerto Rico.
Wait, 347?
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken, there's what, 356 days in a year? 365. Oh, gosh, yes. Okay, there we go. Thank you, Heather.
Yeah. So it's a significant amount of... Wait, I'm sorry. 100 days.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, I was like, I read your, I don't remember my, it being that. There we go.
100
okay.
days out of 347 days.
Right.
My apologies. Hey, forgive me. But he spent nearly a third of his time traveling the world, essentially, and contrasting that with how often he actually rides the system, as well as how often he actually walks the system, pales in comparison. For example, during that same period of time, he only visited train stations about 9 times, and that included the Yellow Line crash, you know, that was sort of cultivating a big news
yeah.
front.
Yeah. So now that we've thoroughly butchered the numbers there, apologies, everyone. A long week, I guess. I want to go to you, Laura, because you did write a column asking, you know, you've talked about this.
Right.
Why is Dorval Carter still running the CTA, given reporting like that? And why is the mayor sticking by him, do you believe?
Well, it's a mystery, especially if we look at the Pedro Martinez case and compare them. Dorval Carter has a long history of having challenges and problems with the system that started before even reporting, the great reporting you're doing, Manny, and some of the other reporting you've done earlier. There's no reliability on the CTA. The service isn't bad. There's a lot of criminal activity. There's some improvement in terms of how the system is being being run, but there's still a long way to go. The mayor has stood by him. Some of the aldermen, particularly the African-American aldermen in the city council, have stood by him. They argue that he's done a great job in terms of bringing federal funding to the city, particularly the extension of the Red Line, which is something that people have been waiting for like 25 years, and that he has a lot of connections to Washington, federal connections. He can bring money in, and that's what we need to be focused on. So that's the argument they make.
And it's an argument that's persisted, and do you expect it's going to continue?
The mayor seems to be sticking by him, and as long as he does, he'll remain there.
Also sticking by Larry Snelling, who it's been a year anniversary, Heather, since Snelling became superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, and a lot, of course, has gone on in that year. What are your thoughts? We had some reporting from the Tribune, the Sun-Times, really saying that there's a belief he's hit his stride.
Well, there's no doubt that he is very proud of the way the police handled the Democratic National Convention. There was weeks of sort of worry and consternation that it was going to be a disaster and that Chicago would, you know, embarrass itself on the national stage once again, either because of protests that got out of control or because police who violated people's constitutional rights. Neither happened, and there's no doubt that both the mayor and the superintendent see that as sort of evidence that they have the department on the right track. We were not granted an opportunity to sit down with Superintendent Snelling to mark his one-year anniversary. I would have had, I think, different questions for him. He is at loggerheads with the head of the biggest police misconduct agency. He has questioned whether that agency is biased against Chicago police. I think there are continuing questions about the police department's ability to oust officers from their ranks that have ties to extremist groups. I also would have had questions about the continuing cost to Chicago taxpayers from police misconduct settlements, and the fact that the department has only complied with 7% of the consent decree fully. I'm sure I'll have
so
additional
questions
to answer that.
The consent decree, for sure. And I think one of those issues that we saw come out during the Democratic National Convention was the use of kettling, you know, when police, you know, kind of block protesters or whoever in, and they would say, no, we didn't do that. But if you were out there, there were several instances where, you know, one of the unsanctioned protests outside the Israeli consulate, there was an area where there was a handful of protesters. That was the night with the most arrests, and there was no way to get out. I mean, as journalists were stuck there, there was activists there, police officers there. And, you know, he said that it wasn't kettling, but many people who have covered, you know, such police activity over the years would disagree with that.
If you can't leave, you would consider it to be
And yeah. that is, in fact, now prohibited by new yeah. departmental rules that were imposed just before the convention began. A lot of questions.
But no sign that there is any sort of fracture between the Johnson administration and the CPD's leadership, correct?
No. None.
Oh, didn't think so. All right, let's talk about somebody else before we run out of time. Ed Burke, that's another big name from city council to the cell. He is still in Illinois, now in a prison in Western Illinois. Now, Manny, does this have any lasting impact on city council operations that the one-time sort of vaunted longest-serving alderman is now a federal prisoner?
I think city council is pretty happy that this can sort of like be behind them now, and they can sort of like pave a new path forward. I think it's also just interesting to note that, you know, this is the most powerful person that sat in city council for decades, and he's now spending 2 years inside a federal prison for racketeering.
2 years, that's a fraction of what prosecutors sought. Now, given this light sentence, is that going to serve as a deterrent, do you think, Sophia?
In Chicago.
I think that can be enough of an answer.
Chicago.
Laura, anything to add?
Chicago and Illinois has a terrible history of corruption. There's been dozens of aldermen that have already gone to prison. There are at least one or two aldermen who are either under investigation or have been indicted right now. So
No indicted sitting members.
We will leave it on that positive note then.
One can always hope.
We are out of time. Our thanks to Heather Sharon, Laura Washington, Sophia Turin, and Manny Ramos. We are back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that is our show for this Friday night. Check out our email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, for more on what you need to know about the complicated issues facing the city. Don't stop there. We also introduce you to new ways to explore your neighborhood and those around you with concert recommendations, weekend activities, and more. Head to WTTW.com/newsletter to sign up and take advantage of all of it before the weekend kicks off. For the Weekend Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a great night. Who's a White Sox fan? So are you rooting for them to lose?
100%.
Yeah. Why?
If you're going to be bad, go all the way.
Make history.
Make history one way or the other.
Exactly.
So you were disappointed with their finally winning 3 games in a row.
Oh, yeah.
Go for the goal.
Go big.
100%.
Do you think that will carry any, let's make this serious, any lessons for Jerry Reinsdorf making history by being the losingest team?
Sell the team to someone who knows baseball.
There we go.
That was quite a piece in the New York Times. Did
yes,
you read
I read
that?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank goodness.
A takedown. Probably not helping another handout to Springfield. Really, I'm very serious. I mean, I know it's not about wins or losses, but reading an article like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Perhaps not.
Because you have questions.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is committed to supporting diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives throughout the legal profession.